Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. The show is about what matters most in life, our minds, our thoughts, our emotions, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. Today in this show, I'll bring you the latest research about teenagers less likely to respond to mothers with controlling tone of voice. This new study showed adolescents were less likely to want to engage with schoolwork when mothers spoke with a pressurizing tone. Well, I thought that's exactly the same for everybody, right? You can't talk like that to your mate. You can't talk like that to anybody, your coworkers or employees or anybody. But I guess the study is with teenagers, so we'll understand more about it. Then I will speak to Dr. Habib Sadeghi. He's the founder of Beehive Integrative and Healing Medical Center. He's called the Soul Doctor. He's amazing. And he's the author of the Clarity Cleanse. And it was forwarded by Gwyneth Paltrow. It says 12 steps of finding renewed energy, spiritual fulfillment, and emotional healing. He's a great presenter. And I always have a lot of fun when I talk to him. And I learn a lot. You can call us on the studio line, 951-922-3532, to speak to Dr. Sadeghi or I. Be sure to listen to my podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, and share with, go to YouTube channel. You can go to my website, fujian.com. I'd love to hear from you. Email me. Let me know what it is that you like. Go to the podcast and subscribe and write some reviews. Love to hear from you. We'll be right back with the tip of the week.
Hello, I'm Dr. Fujian, and I have great news for you. I'm offering a special time-limited offer to anyone who's interested in online therapy or coaching sessions. I've developed the awareness integration model, which allows in only 12 weeks to raise your self-esteem and confidence and let go of your thoughts and emotions that produce depression and anxiety for you. So call today to schedule your online session and save $600. Call me today at 818-648-2140. That's 818-648-2140. Or go to www.fujian.com.
Hey, this week has been all about love, the week of love, the week of openness. And therefore, a lot of abundance and generosity from the surrounding. I've really experienced this week. It was really interesting. As I experienced love myself, the world kind of opened. Or I thought it opened. Maybe it was always there. And when I was closed, I wasn't experiencing. So have you noticed, when you are closed, upset, or tired, feeling non-trusting, or angry, you may not be able to receive the love and abundance that is offered to you from your surroundings. You may not see it or appreciate it. Have you noticed that when you are open, calm, trusting, and in gratitude, you will notice what is out there from the world and around you and from people who are around you? You may even notice that the comfort that you have, a home to live in, furniture to use, warm water to take a shower with, a fridge full of food, a car to drive, clothes to wear, and all in all is an accumulation of work of many people who work hard for you. You may notice how your parents, your mate, your children, coworkers, neighbors offer you their love and service. You can begin appreciating how you contribute also to this network of resources and appreciate everyone who contributes to you directly or indirectly. When you face the world with love and openness, you begin to realize how lucky you are to be a part of such a great and abundant network. This view may entice you to put your all in creating a better world for yourself and everyone around you by sharing your love and kindness. So choose to connect to the network of love and abundance instead of hate, greed, and destruction. Begin a part of love and abundance. Being a part of love and abundance network will bring you joy, connectedness, and happiness. Being a part of hate, greed, and destruction will ultimately destroy you, since there will always be someone who can compete better than you, and they'll destroy you. Living in the love and abundance state promotes cooperation and constructing a better world. So I'm truly thankful to KMET 1490 AM to bring this opportunity for me to be with all of you. And I truly appreciate Sean for creating and being with us throughout the time that we're together and directing all of it. And I appreciate all of you who are listening and being with us and opening your heart and ear to hear and love for you to share your love with everyone else. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with the latest research.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Well, for all of you who have teenagers out there, you already know this by experience, but I guess researchers are going to tell you your experience again. They found out teenagers are less likely to cooperate or put effort into their mother's request when they are said in a controlling tone of voice. Researchers at Cardiff University have found that out. Speaking to a son or daughter in a pressurizing tone is also accompanied by a range of negative emotions and less feelings of closeness. A new study has discovered this. The experimental study involving over 1,000 adolescents age 14 to 15 is the first to examine how subjects respond to the tone of voice when receiving instructions from their mothers. It's exactly the same when you talk to your mate, I promise you. Even when the specific words are used are exactly the same. If parents want conversations with their teens to have the most benefit, it's important to remember to use supportive tones of voice. It's easy for parents to forget, especially if they're feeling stressed, tired, or pressured themselves. The study showed that subjects were much more likely to engage with instructions that conveyed a sense of encouragement and support for self-expression and choice. The results will have obvious interest to parents, could also be of relevance to school teachers whose use of more motivational language could impact the learning and well-being of students in their classrooms. Adolescents likely feel more cared about and happier, and as a result, they try harder at school. I'm telling you, everybody's like that. When parents and teachers speak in a supportive rather than a pressuring tone of voice, the new study published September 26th of this year, 2019, in the Journal of Developmental Psychology, involved 486 males and 514 males who were aged 14 and 15. In this experiment, each of the subjects were randomly assigned to groups that would hear identical messages delivered by their mothers of adolescents in either a controlling, autonomy, supportive, or neutral tone of voice. Expressions of control impose pressure and attempts to coerce or push listeners to action. In contrast, those that express autonomy, support, convey a sense of encouragement and a supportive listener's sense of choice and opportunity for self-expression. Each of the mothers delivered 30 sentences that centered around schoolwork and include instructions such as, it's time now to go to school, you will read this book tonight, and you will do well on this assignment. After the delivery of these messages, each student undertook a survey and answered questions about how they would feel if their own mother had spoken to them in a particular way. The findings showed that the tone of voice used by mothers can impact significantly on teenagers' emotional, relational, and behavioral intention responses across most outcomes. Adolescents who listened to mothers making motivational statements in the controlling tone of voice responded in an undesirable ways. In contrast, autonomy-supportive tones elicited positive reactions from listeners as compared to listening to mothers who used a neutral tone of voice to deliver their motivational sentences. These results nicely illustrate how powerful our voices are, and in choosing the right tone to communicate is crucial in all of our conversations. Wow, I'm so excited. Dr. Habib Sadeghi is with us. He came right in the middle of the research. What a great place to show up with us. Hi, Dr. Sadeghi.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. For everyone who's listening and viewing us, Dr. Sadeghi is a founder of Beehive of Healing Integrative Medical Center in Agoura Hills. He has served as an attending physician at UCLA Santa Monica Medical Center and is currently a clinical instructor of family medicine at Western University of Health Sciences. Dr. Sadeghi is the author of two books, The Clarity Cleanse, right here, 12 Steps of Finding Renewed Energy, Spiritual Fulfillment, and Emotional Healing. And the other one is Within, a Spiritual Awakening to Love and Weight Loss. He's a regular contributor to Huffington Post and the lifestyle website Goop, and serves as the editor-in-chief and publisher of the annual health wellness journal MegaZen. It's an amazing journal. Dr. Sadeghi is also the co-founder of Love Button Global Movement, a nonprofit organization that promotes loving action and philanthropy within the communities of improved social cohesion. He's been a presenter and a keynote speaker in various organizations. So glad to have you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for that introduction. And it's really very auspicious to be here with you today. And I know that you're going to have your big day very soon as well. So congratulations. And
thank
I send
you
so much blessings.
Thank you.
For
thank
you.
I'm putting my love button on right now. See, I have it. I have it right here. So, Dr. Sadeghi, what are we going to talk about? It's almost like, doesn't matter what I talk to you about, I always learn, and you're always gracious and amazing. So I know that you were doing some type of work also with ADHD, but you
right.
do so many work in so many different level that I want to hear everything.
Sure. I think so the article that I had shared with you, and I think that's really what you were asking of me, was an article that I had written. And I had looked at a possible correlation between specifically diet and a vegan or a vegetarian diet, and when it comes to the onset of ADD and ADHD depression, specifically in children and adolescents. And in that paper, what I had outlined was that, yes, there is a correlation, because most of us were unaware that the essential fatty acids naturally in the body gets converted to cholesterol. Cholesterol is present in every single cell in the body. So every human being has over a trillion cell, and in each cell we have cholesterol. Cholesterol is, if you would, the gate around the cell. Without cholesterol, life is not possible. And the reason that I'm taking my time and I'm outlining this is because most people, when you tell them cholesterol, it's as if you just show them the birdie. They get offended. Cholesterol is not a bad molecule. Cholesterol is the molecule of life. And the reason that it's the molecule of life is because essential fatty acid gets converted to cholesterol. Cholesterol then goes and it gives us different hormones, such as pregnenolone. It comes from cholesterol. It gives us progesterone. It comes from cholesterol. It gives us cortisol. How many people are, you know, in a fight or flight response? How many people have adrenal fatigue, adrenal exhaustion? So it comes from cholesterol. We get DHEA, which is the precursor to testosterone, to estrogen. All of these hormones, they come from cholesterol. So if you are, if you literally are a child and, you know, your mom and dad, your caretaker, your parents, they think that it might be best for you to be on a vegan, vegetarian diet, that might not really be true, because that could create more harm for you. Now, some of the listeners might say, well, wait a minute, you know, people in India, they're vegan, there's sex of populations that they're vegan or vegetarian. How come, you know, how come there's nothing wrong with them and they're doing great? Yes, I agree with you. But when you look at generation after generation, that's a completely different mindset.
Right.
Than a person that all of a sudden they read a book or they watch a movie or someone says something and they say, well, okay, I'm going to be vegan or I'm going to be, you know, doing this. And they're doing it mindlessly. They're not doing it intelligently. And obviously, as a mature, sophisticated, emancipated adult, every human being, you know, we're responsible. I mean, if yeah. I want to be a vegan, I can be a vegan. But my children, you know, I'm not sure if I would really advocate that. Right. For children, for the very same reason right. that I just shared with you.
I totally agree with you. I actually tried for about 3 years to become vegetarian, not vegan, but vegetarian. And because I didn't do it intelligently and I didn't study about it, I actually made my body worse. I made it much more acidic. I blew up because all I was having was starches. And I had a really bad effect and experience with that. So I totally agree with you that in order to shift your diet completely to something else, it's just the concept of a causality of knowing, just, you know, because I don't want to kill animals, or because, you know, having the cows are killing the ozone and all of that. It's okay to have that, but like you said, they need to know what it is that works for their body, and it isn't like anything that is out there. It will definitely work for their body. Each person really needs to understand what works for their body.
Absolutely. I think it's really sweet and compassionate that there are human beings on the planet that they don't ideologically, they don't want to harm other animals. And I really appreciate that. And I, as I said, they have the prerogative to choose that, and that's okay. And I'm sure, and what I advocate is to do it, you know, to do it intelligently. I'll never forget, I was doing a research fellowship with probably one of the smartest human being on the planet that I know of. His name is Alfredo Sadoun. At the time, he was the chairman of the neuro-ophthalmology department at Doheny Eye Institute, which back then was part of USC. Now it's part of Jule Stein, UCLA. And I remember this young lady who came in. She was in her maybe late 30s, and she was going blind. And, you know, after Alfredo examined her and so forth, what she ended up having was she had a folate deficiency. So a lot of the B12, the folic acid, the B6, all the Bs mostly, they come from animal products. And mm-hmm. I'll never forget when she walked away, she looked at Alfred and she said, well, what you're telling me is that I really did this to myself. Because she was a vegan, she wasn't, you know, consuming eggs, she wasn't consuming dairy and other animal products. And we know that this creates an issue, because when you look at early 90s, there was a blindness epidemic in Cuba. And initially, United States thought that this was a virus and they wanted to take care of it. 91 kilometers from, you know, from United States soil. So they sent two neuro-ophthalmologists to Cuba. One of the two was Alfredo Sadoun, my mentor. And, you know, once throughout the process, Alfredo realized that this had a lot to do with the economic embargo and people not having enough animal products and the consumption of bootleg rum that has a high content of methanol, and it creates B12 deficiency, folic acid deficiency, B6 deficiency. And once he discovered that, and then through, you know, they throughout the trickle down, they distributed the multivitamins, including high Bs, and a lot of people regained their sights back. So the reason that I say that is because anything to be done intelligently is very helpful. You know, I listened to the research that you were sharing. Absolutely. Of course, the language, the linguistic abstraction that we use, it's very effective. I mean, one of the best books that I've ever read was by one of my other teachers, Gabor Maté.
Mm-hmm. And he's amazing.
Let me see if I can pull the book here. It's a great book, and I highly recommend it for all the parents. It's called Hold On to Your Kids. It's by two people. One of them is Gordon Neufeld, as well as Gabor Maté. And listen, if we don't want our children to be oriented towards, if you would, other little idiots like themselves, because they don't know any better.
Right.
Well, guess what you need to do is you need to be right there. You need to communicate with them. And you need to establish a level of connection instead of againstness. You know, when you tell them, don't use media, don't use this, don't do that, from the moment that they wake up, you're telling them no. And right. At a very young age. So, of course, when they're early adolescents, there is, you know, what sets in is a deep sense of resentment, anger, and againstness. And they're going to listen to other people. They're not going to be receptive to you.
You know something, Dr. Sadeghi, one thing that I've understood is having little knowledge sometimes is dangerous, because when we get just an excerpt of a knowledge of this this much, a little one in a news bit that such and such is bad for you, and then so everybody goes and stops taking it, or such and such is good for you, and then everybody's in this craze of taking it. So it's like little information, sometimes it harasses you more and your body. And what I'm hearing from you, and I've experienced with myself, is to have the knowledge of what works. And sometimes we can have that experience with our own body if we're in tune with our body, because our body will tell us this is not good for me and this is good for me. And then, you know, going to physicians and doctors that have an understanding and asking questions, listening to them, and knowing what the bigger picture of the information it is that you can actually use. Now, most people don't do that, to be honest with you. Most people, including, you know, and I've been guilty of that. We don't. We take these little excerpts because every day there is so many studies that shows up that we just don't have access to them. But one of the things that I'm sensing from what you're saying is many of the disease and epidemic diseases that show up in large quantities, such as at this time, especially in the USA, the ADHD for children has been, let's say, overdiagnosed or diagnosed highly for the little bit of an up and down. All the children assumably get this type of a diagnosis. And when usually you see something that is an epidemic, so there's some cause for it that these children are acting up a little bit. Maybe they're not paying attention. Maybe they have a lot of high, strong energy in their body that needs to be focused. But there's some of it is also that electronic and things that are around are taking their attention and, you know, they create a multi-attention facility for them. I'm sure you've noticed, I even look at TV and news and they can't just have a still picture. Everything has to be moving around and, you know, gets your attention from here to there. So everything that is showing up, it's also adding to that piece. And I'm also hearing that the food and the disciplinary actions that maybe their parents do around food, or the maybe the sugar content or something that is being more given to kids is also creating some of the ADHD.
You're absolutely right. So what I hear you saying, Dr. Zane, is that you cannot be, human beings cannot be lazy, right? If you want to be lazy, then we need to have a trusted advisor and we need to listen. If we don't have the trusted advisor, then we need to be able to develop the skill set, which is thinking, to get the data that it's provided, the information that's provided, and ask appropriate questions and think through it to see if it makes sense and if it's really something that applies to us. And once we do that, then things, you can't just consider something to be good or bad. And that's a very reductionistic way of living. You know, whenever someone tells me that this is good, this is bad, I usually run, and I run very fast, because that's the time that they want to sell you something. And I've been approached by people that they have significant zone of influence, and they want to put my face in Dr. Siddiqui super duper brain power multivitamins, and yeah, of course. And they would sell millions of bottles, and it would be very profitable. But I've never really agreed. Why? Because if there are to the extent that there are 7.85 billion people on the planet, I need to make 7.85 billion multivitamins that would apply. And that's really the only way that this would work. This idea, to be youthful again, or to do this, and if you eat this, and if you take that, you will. It's not only gimmicky, it doesn't make sense, and sometimes you could actually do more harm. And if you do have cancer cells inside, and every human being wakes up every morning with cancer cells, but our body fights it off, the natural killer cells and various different things. But if you have a temperament or a terrain or the body that actually produces significant amount of inflammation or cancer cells, and you do take a multivitamin, you can do more harm to yourself. So this idea that this is good, this is bad, it's reductionistic, it's naive, and it doesn't work. And it's not an intelligent way of looking at life and living. The idea that, I can tell you that water is bad. Why? Because right now, as we're speaking, there are people that they're in ICU setting in Cedars and UCLA or USC or out in where you are in Hoag's Hospital in Newport Beach, that they're in coma because they drank so much water that their sodium dropped, right? Psychogenic polydipsia, people that they're just juggling water down and they wash out a lot of the minerals, they go into coma and eventually they die. So does that mean water is bad? No. You got to do things intelligently. You talked about food. If someone comes in and they talk about ADD or ADHD, even when they are diagnosed by a pediatric psychiatrist or a pediatric specialist, I pay close attention to the dynamic of the family, the family constellation, the quality of food. We have documented functional MRIs, meaning that they hook up kids and then they give them food that they're GMO, genetically modified organism, and we can see that the parts of the brain that activates, it basically indicates that, oh my God, they have hyperactivity. They have attention deficit disorders. So we know that by eating, GMO, genetically modified organisms, you contribute with having those symptoms. So if you live in a household that there is a significant amount of disagreement, anger, resentfulness, there is no happiness, there is, if you were born since the age of three, there no one is having an eye contact with you, no one is communicating with you, and just because they want you to shut up so that they can have their food, they're sticking a media right in your face, and now you grew up with it, and it's the media that so eloquently you mentioned, that every 12 seconds there has to be a movement to catch their attention. And then, oh my God, they have these sounds and they have these just exuberant stimuli. Well, who wouldn't be, who wouldn't be suffering from attention deficit disorder? I mean, how many people are gardening? How many people are, turning off their phones when they go, when they go home? How many people are sitting around in their dinner table and they're actually soul gazing and they're saying, well, how was your day today? Mm-hmm. And allowing little Johnny, allowing little Muhammad, little Jack, little Jill, little this to tell you, well, it was terrible. So and so did this. How many people are using the chewing that occurs during dinner table as an opportunity to chew through our days so that when we go into sleep, into a deep level of sleep, or what's referred to as REM sleep, rapid eye movement part of this sleep, because of the highest level of growth hormone that's produced, we get to purge, we get to cleanse out our day. So the next morning when we wake up, it's like a blank canvas.
Yes, we're fresh.
So those are, it's very simple to just, let me tell you how simple it is. Here's a prescription pad.
Right.
Here's the pen. I mean, within 90 seconds, I can put someone for 90 days with 3 refills. Great. How cool is that? But what have you solved?
Right.
Now you're setting them up, because it's very easy to put people on when you look at all these medications, their side effects, the major side effects for them, especially when they are young.
One of the things that is in your book, and you called it specifically the clarity cleanse, because there's a specific reason why you called it, you started with clarity. It's not just another cleansing book or, health book or diet book. You called it clarity. Say why. What is it that you think that clarity is? Why is it clarity the first component of this way of taking care of yourself?
Sure. When you're looking at, let's say you are the greatest chef, and let's say you have all the main ingredients that you need, in order for you to be able to do what you were born to do, what you have the dexterity to be able to do, you need this spaciousness to, cut the tomato, to cut the bell pepper. You gotta be able to break the eggs and, to make the omelet. So simply because you're gifted, simply because you have the knowledge, simply because you have the ingredients, doesn't allow you to be able to provide yourself and cook for yourself. So this spaciousness that is needed externally to cook, that spaciousness inside the mental space that's required, it's referred to as clarity. And most human beings, I think it's a side effect of the modern world. You look at every human being and you look at the number of emails in their email box. I mean, people have 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 emails in there. And they actually think that at some point they're going to go back and they're going to review it and they're going to answer these emails. They're, look at their people that they're walking around on their, cell phones, and they have unanswered text messages. So their phone messages that people haven't had chance to listen to. There is such an array of information that's coming in. It's sort of like keep bringing eggs and tomatoes and bell pepper and garlic and butter and ghee. We have so much material, so much information is coming at us that we don't have this spaciousness to be able to process it. So to the extent that I believe, based on anthroposophical principles, that our consciousness precedes phenotypic expression. In other words, before little Johnny's neurotransmitter is disturbed, there has to be a consciousness of hyperactivity, not being acknowledged, not being seen, not being mirrored, that it leads into the downregulation or the disturbance of the neurotransmitter. And by putting people on medication, it will have a reverse effect. Medications create what's referred to as tachyphylaxis. You know, if you get someone and you put them on a wheelchair and you say, you know, you're tired or you sprained your ankle, why don't you sit on this moped and just go around for the rest of the day, the week, the month, the year? And well, at the end of the year, they've lost muscle. They have, you know, atrophy of the muscle fibers. They won't be able to stand up and to walk. So to the extent that we know, we're aware of the plasticity of the brain, when you put people on medications, then it's natural production of the chemicals inside the brain that it's referred to as neurotransmitters will drop off. So then people need to be taking these medications for the rest of their lives. Now, it's great when you're looking at trickle-down economy,
right.
But it's not health, it's not healing, and it's not supporting people. Because now they're taking these medications, and at night they can't rest, because most of these medications, they're really modified versions of speed. So when you put people on speed, it's sort of like pressing the gas on the car. It's more difficult to stop at the end of the night when you want to go to sleep. So people are sleeping later and later and later, and they're laying flat in their beds, tossing and turning. And now they need a second medication.
To bring them down.
To calm them down, to put them to sleep. Now you put them on another medication for insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
Now they don't, if they don't take medication, now they feel, you know, jittery inside. They feel like they're anxious. Now they go in and they say, I'm anxious. And they put them on an anxiolytics to break down their anxiety, another medication. And if they don't want to do that, you know, human beings, they do the best that they can with the knowledge that they have. That's really what human beings do. So now we self-medicate. Now we consume alcohol, or they use, you know, some type of self-medication to calm themselves down. And it all over a period of time, it just eats through the mental spaciousness that I refer to as clarity. Now you have a life which is filled with chaos.
Right. Is there a particular form of dietary path that you have found that works for ADHD for children and then adults?
So that's a brilliant question. And a good way to address it would be to look at what it is that we know that doesn't work, a lot of which you covered. We talked about genetically modified organisms. Eating mostly organic is very helpful. And I'm aware that not everyone can eat organic 100%. But guess what? Just look at some of the most, here's what you do. Look up, you can just look your favorite search engine, okay? And you can look up some of the fruits or food that they're usually very pesticide filled. Things such as strawberry, things such as apples, right? These are some of the things that maybe if you want to have them, maybe you could have them organic. So they don't have as much pesticides and fungicide in them that we know it really activates the parts of the brain, especially children, because their brain, they're still developing. That would create hyperactivity, that would, create attention deficit disorders. So eating mostly organic as much as you can, consuming water, making sure that you get enough rests, sleeping at night, before you sleep, you know, not just cutting out the media, turning down the lights. You know, most human beings, if you look at, just look at the birds, just do what birds do. You know, as you're traveling, as you're walking or driving down the streets towards the end of the day where Earth is setting, okay, it's not a sunset, it's Earth setting. You'll see, you know, you see birds sitting on a wire somewhere and they're looking at They're looking at this beautiful sky. What are they doing? They're preparing for sleeping. See, over a period of millions of years, our eyes, when they see a blue color, they activate the parts of the brain that cuts off melatonin. We know melatonin is a very important chemical when it comes to handling sleeping and supporting ADD and ADHD. So at night, if you want to watch TV, if you want to listen to the news, watch a movie, great. You can easily get yourself a pair of glasses that's called blue blockers. Well, what do? They do exactly what they're called. They literally will block the blue light. Mm. And by blocking the blue lights, now the brain doesn't think by looking at this screen, and this screen could be as simple as your smartphone.
Oh, right.
And because all of that, they activate the brain. So by just getting, it's $12, and it's the best $12 that you can invest, 12, 13, whatever it is, that you can get it, and you can get it everywhere. It's called blue, like the color blue, blockers, like you block something, blue blockers. By doing that, now all of a sudden you're setting yourself up to have a very restful, rejuvenating sleep. How difficult is that? Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to eat dinner, then, you know, don't eat beyond 6 o'clock. Don't eat beyond 7 o'clock. Why? Because every organ in the body has a clock. See, as I'm sitting here, not every single organ in my body is functioning. It's create chaos. So at night, when you go to sleep, liver.
Can we hear you?
Detoxification for rejuvenation.
Yeah, I think we lost you for a minute. You said that when we go at night, and you were talking about the liver detoxifying. So go ahead and share more about that.
Sure. Yeah. So what we're talking about is that every organ in the body has a clock, has a system. Not every organ in the body is active at the same time. Liver is mostly active at night. If we eat a very heavy meal late at night, and late is beyond 7 o'clock, 7 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night, then the body is processing and the liver will not have the ability to rejuvenate, to detoxify, to cleanse out. You know, being able to, when we get up, wake up in the morning, even for kids, just teaching them to start with a little bit of warm water, maybe a little bit of lemon, and they can get used to it. If they don't want to do that, just give them a glass of water.
Right, you start with the water, actually.
12 hours. Yeah, you could actually do that. Then set them up. You know, don't start with cereal. Don't start with a carbohydrate. Pay close attention to the glycemic index, which is the rate that the sugar breaks down. When you eat something like cereal, bread, you get a significant amount, high content of sugar, and then it drops. When the sugar goes up and it drops, now this kid goes into this process that he becomes hyperactive. He could become hypoglycemic, and he or she doesn't know exactly what to do. So then they...
So it seems like if you are noticing and you're aware, and you really understand about,
pay attention.
Right, if you understand what goes on in the morning or understand what goes on at night at your body, then you can modify whatever it is that's happening. So starting the day with protein versus sugar, then it would support you not to have those type of peak experiences of sugar high, which a lot of times allows more energy for the ADHD.
Absolutely, you know, including things such as fortified fat, which, you know, like ghee would be a good example. G-H-E-E. Ghee in Ayurvedic medicine, it's actually considered to be a medicine. Mm. Cooking, you know, if you want to make an omelet, using ghee, right, instead of oil, having a piece of gluten-free bread, having ghee on it, and some honey, raw honey. Most human beings, they're unaware that there's a difference between raw honey and the honey that is processed. A honey that is processed, that is cooked, that they separate, you know, all the bee propolis and all the good minerals from it.
It's not as useful, obviously.
So that's not what I'm talking about. That's right. I'm talking about some raw honey with bee propolis, unprocessed, uncooked. Now, and especially going to a, you know, there are beekeepers everywhere. Now, look, this is so good. This is so good. And I share this from a place of humility. Finding out, I don't care where you live. You can go and look up and find a beekeeper. And going and say, and just getting just this small bottle of, you know, a small bottle of honey, just unprocessed honey, and having a small little spoon, right, every day, your allergies will disappear.
Mm.
You know, and to the extent that you have an adolescent, their allergies will disappear. Why? Because the beekeeper is within your vicinity. The bees, they pollinate and they pick up the toxins there, you know, all the pollens and everything, and they process it, they break it down, and it's included in their honey. So when you have a spoon of honey, it's really medicine, and your body starts producing antibody and resistance to the allergens, the all the things that there's around you. Now, why is that important? Well, you're not going to be sneezing. You know, your little kid is not going to be doing this all the time, and they're not going to have what's referred to as an allergic salute, because now they're going to have a crease here. They're not going to have the allergic shiner right underneath. It's not going to be all dark. They're going to be able to go to a deeper level of sleep. You don't need to take antihistamines. You know, we know it was published in reputable Nature that the more antihistamine.
I think you're cutting off. The more antihistamine that you have, it seems like it's blocking your natural essence. You were saying that you got cut off for a minute, that the more antihistamine that you're using, the same way you were saying that your body loses the ability to actually fight these because you're giving it the antihistamine. Is that what you were saying?
That's exactly right. What does histamine do? Histamine increases blood flow. When you take antihistamine, you decrease blood flow. So then the natural killer cells in the red blood and white blood cells and so forth in the blood, they cannot reach the cancer cells. So the chances of people getting cancer goes up. That's a good way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. And not to mention that there are correlation between antihistamine and actually cancer causing agents.
Mm.
So this is a lot of information, but there is simplicity. There is a system underneath it. What's underneath it is clarity. What's underneath it is slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Slow down. You know, it just because you're not on Facebook, just because you're not on Instagram, just because you're not tweeting, just because, you know, you're not on social media, that doesn't mean that it's the end of the world.
Right.
It's okay. And if you want to be on there, just bring some moderation to it. So that spaciousness, children, they mirror what we do. If I speak 100 miles an hour, one of the things...
We're losing you again. If we speak 100 miles an hour or if we act 100 miles an hour, one of the things...
anxiety.
Right. If you speed up with speeding, anxiety shows up. That's what I'm hearing from you.
That's exactly right. So, you know, setting up children, setting up adolescents for success, when they wake up, how are they waking up? Are they being touched? Are they being looked at? Are we shouting at them? Are we keep screaming that, hurry up, I'm late for work? And then when you drop them off, of course, they're all...
Yeah, they're not being connected to their own body. They're not being connected to the family. They're not going to being connected to the love.
They're going to have.
Right. At times you get. I think the Wi-Fi is a bit slow, so at times you get stuck. And so I'm sharing what I think you're wanting to say until you come back to us. So what I heard from you is that there's a way that a human being wakes up to the world, and the way they wake up, they can either wake up to care and love and connection to themselves and to their parents and other human being in the world, or they can wake up into a space which is like, screw this, I'm disconnecting because there's harshness, there's too much going on, and I just need to go into my own zone because I can't handle being out there.
Exactly. Very well said. That's right. So this is a multifaceted way of approaching a problem instead of wanting to just take a medication.
Yeah. So everyone who's watching and listening to us, Dr. Habib Sadeghi is the author of Clarity Cleanse, also the founder of Beehive Medical Center, Integrative Medical Center. Dr. Sadeghi, I think we only have a couple more minutes, and I really want you also to talk about Love Button Movement, because I know it's an international movement, it's a global movement, and I know that even Sister Jenna had said that it's in New York right now, and I think last weekend it was also participating in New York and the global citizenship concert that they had. Talk a little bit about that so our listeners know a bit and how they could support it.
Absolutely. So Love Button Global Movement is a grassroots effort, and the tagline for it is pause and love. Mm-hmm. We truly believe that loving is really, in order to love, you need to have that spaciousness, that mental space inside. And love as an active role is not only healthy for us, but it's healthier for society because it provides a deeper level of connection, compassion. We know research after research, we know that people who love, they, you know, you lower the level of psychosomatic illnesses, lower the cortisol and so forth. And your listeners can find more information on lovebutton.org.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And they can also find you at beehive.com, right?
Beehiveofhealing.com.
Beehiveofhealing.com. Thank you so much, for Dr. Sadeghi, for in this time that you're going all over the world, you set a time again to be on my show. It's always a pleasure, and I always learn from you. So thank you for your beautiful time. And hopefully, as you have more to say, and I'm sure you always do, and with the latest research, that you will show up and talk to us and to our listeners again and again. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invite, and you're special, and I really appreciate what you're doing for so many of us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And for all of you who are listening, create an amazing world for yourself and everyone around you. And until next week, take great care of yourself. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.